This is
Make It Kind.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Matfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Kind.
Get woke.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
New from Radiotopia presents Red for Revolution, an audio drama about Black love, queer romance, and liberation. Join Jasmine, an 18-year-old navigating her queer identity while learning about her grandmother's secret love affair. Through her discoveries, we're transported back to 1971 to witness two remarkable women embark on a romance that defies all conventions. Subscribe to Radiotopia Presents and listen to Red for Revolution wherever you get your podcasts.
On WPFW 89.3 FM, in the nation's capital and streaming everywhere, it's good to be back in the nation's capital broadcasting on local radio. We've got plenty of ground to cover, so many things taking place. But first of all, want to share the story of a dear friend and colleague, especially in the context of everything that's been going on in Gaza, as we learn even today that there's still a very serious struggle to be sure that the humanitarian aid is getting into Gaza and that Palestinians are not continuing to be starved. History will look back upon this for really what it is. There are those who may be in denial about what is going on, but there is no question about what is going on there. Last year, earlier this year in the spring, I joined the students at Columbia University in their ongoing protests against the genocide in Gaza. It was a very powerful statement that really was the centerpiece or ground zero, if you will, for a lot of the student protests taking place around the country. And as you know, with Trump being in office, there's been a lot of backlash, a lot of attacks on these young people. But that has not necessarily stopped. And so one individual who we want to hear from today, who many of you may have heard about in the news and has had quite an ordeal, is joining us. He was the co-founder of the Palestinian Student Association at Columbia University. He was one of the leaders of the process, who went for naturalization meeting, a hearing, and was detained by ICE. Obviously, he's no longer in detention because he joins us this morning on Make It Plain. But we want to hear a bit about his story and hear as much about his case as is allowed. First of all, I'm going to introduce him. His name is Mohsen Madawi. Mohsen, how are you, my brother? Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam. Good morning, dear brother. It's a great honor to be on your show.
And it's an honor to have you. Also joining us is one of Mohsen's attorneys, Nate Wessler. Nate, good morning to you.
Good morning. Pleased to be here.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to have you. Nate, if it's convenient, if not, that's okay. If it's convenient to turn on your camera, that'd be good, because we're gonna record this as much as we can. So first of all, and folks, you know, the way I like to do this is I defer to counsel. So Nate has full authority. If I step over a certain line, Nate is there to bring me back over the line. If it's an inappropriate question, or if it's best for Mohsen not to answer directly and for Nate to answer, that's why Nate is here. So that's, you know, I'm very, very clear on that, because we want to be sure Mohsen is protected. Because as a matter of fact, Nate, Mohsen's matter is still not fully resolved legally. Is that correct?
That's right. We are still in federal court in Vermont and in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit, fighting for his right not to be detained in retaliation for his speech. So it's ongoing. Mohsen, you know, is his best spokesperson, and he can tell you what's going on. But I'm okay here in case we have legal questions.
So Mohsen, tell us what happened. Were you going to a naturalization hearing? Is that what this was?
This is exactly right. I was going to a naturalization hearing after living, working, and studying in this country for over 10 years. Mm-hmm. Coming into this country in a legal way, having a green card for roughly 10 years, paying my taxes, working hard, trying to live, quote-unquote, the American dream. And I've done everything, you know, by the book, the way how it's supposed to be. I applied for my citizenship. And when I showed up to the interview, it was basically when I get detained.
And to be clear, you've been here 10 years. You are here. You just didn't roll up in here. You're here. You're authorized to be here, and you're authorized to be a student, correct?
That's correct. Yes.
And so you get to the hearing, and then if you can, if you're at liberty to, describe what happened once you arrived and how the detention unfolded.
Well, before this, brother, I want to share with you, just like with your audience, this image. And it's very important image to capture, right? So you get a person. I am a Palestinian refugee, came from a refugee camp where my family still resides. 10 years in the United States, I developed roots in Vermont, which I call home, as Gibran Khalil Gibran says, and home where you feel safe and loved, and those who surround you there are your people. So I consider Vermont a home, and I am surrounded by my people here. And
hold that point. I just want to say this. I'm going to share the video later, y'all. He was detained wrongfully, but when you see where he's sitting, as opposed to where I'm sitting, he's doing a lot better than me. I mean, that's a beautiful Vermont is a beautiful place. So
yeah,
you know,
this is the heart of nature, as you see the mountains. So this is unfolding behind.
If this is what post detention looks like, I need to come up there with you, man. But go ahead.
Well, we must make it happen. Maybe in the soon future we can do an interview from the heart of nature here. And you know, nature has its own healing elements. I mean, I came from a background of trauma, of loss, of deep level of injustice and oppression. And as you know, for a child to go through that, the children would develop and would carry level of trauma. And this is the place where I was able to process my trauma to be able to heal. So this state and this region did not only provide me with a community, but it provided me with the healing path to be centered in love, to be able to hold compassion and empathy, and to be able to feel this level of injustice and to say no no to injustice and no to war and no to the killing of children and the starvation of people and the continuous oppression. And because of this, basically, I was detained. So living here, working here, studying here, paying taxes, doing everything by the book, I apply for citizenship. And over a year later, I get detained. However, and for me, it did not feel like detention. It literally felt like abduction, because everything was done in a very one might say, malicious way. It wasn't clear. They could have sent me a note and said, "We would want you to show up because you there is an order to detain you." They could have came to my apartment or to my school. They could have detained me similar to other students. But no, I'm the only student who was detained during a citizenship interview, asking to be a citizen of this country after being a permanent resident for about 10 years. So the process goes that I go to this interview and I suspected that there is something fishy about it. So I reached out to, first of all, I'm grateful for Nate and the rest of the legal team who have prepared very, very well for this, because we had basically orders drafted in order to submit to the court to prevent my transportation to Louisiana, which happened to every other student. I was the last student to be detained and the first to be released because of a number of things. One of them is the legal team was completely prepared. So we prepare legally. I contact my representatives before. I say, this is who I am. This is the work that I've been doing. And some of them I already had connections with. And they do interviews and they say, this may be the last interview or the last time you hear from me for a while. And indeed, the day I showed up on April 14th, 2025, what seemed to be, it should be a regular, normal interview for naturalization, my citizenship interview, roughly like 20-30 minutes before after I entered the USCIS office. This is the place where you go for the interview. Agents from the Department of Homeland Security enter the office and they say, "You are under arrest," without giving me any reason or showing me any document. And I had a lawyer with me, an immigration lawyer at that time, and they literally like isolated me from my lawyer and they put the handcuffs on my wrist. And you know, the moment they showed the handcuffs, they did not give me any room to even ask questions. I said, "I am a peaceful man." And this is something that I prepared for gladly. I learned from what happened with other students, which gave me this privilege to stay in Vermont and not be transferred to Louisiana and to be released before anybody else.
So isn't it true too that those who detained you were masked? Is that the case?
They were masked and they were armed as well. That's correct.
So then obviously they knew you were coming. This was planned.
My guess that it was like orchestrated, not only planned, because they had tickets to fly me outside of Vermont. They had my flight scheduled technically within roughly 2 hours from the moment I get detained. And that's, we missed the flight by minute.
Wow.
The other thing also, brother, they were hiding at the USCIS building. When we entered, there's no sign that there's anybody there, but they were hiding, some in cars, some in the back hall of the office. And after I finished my interview, when basically the agent who interviewed me asked me if I would be willing to take the Pledge of Allegiance to protect and defend the Constitution of this country, and I said, absolutely. He said, "Give me a second. And then the agents stormed, and that's when they arrested me. And you can see that the economy in it. They're asking me if I'm willing to take the Pledge of Allegiance, and at the same time, they are the ones who violate the laws of this country by actually arresting and detaining me.
Attorney Nate Wessler is here with Mohsen Modawi, a very special guest. And Nate, forgive me, I didn't mention your affiliation. May I do that? You're with the
ACLU,
correct? Okay, I'm sorry I didn't say that. Is there video evidence of this? Was any of this recorded in that space?
You know, there's a video of Mohsen being taken out of this government building in handcuffs. And, you know, with his characteristic presence of mind, he sort of pauses as long as they will let him and gives the peace sign to the camera. And then he's, you know, shoved into the car and driven off. So there's no video that we have from inside the building. And then, of course, they brought him to an immigration office on the way to the airport and then tried to rush him onto this plane that, as he said, luckily they missed. And then by the time they got him back to the office, the federal judge had responded to our habeas petition and issued the order saying he can't be deported and he can't be taken out of Vermont. Hold him here while we figure out what's going on.
And he has a green card. So even is that illegal unto itself? I mean, I don't know. And I know the Supreme Court has probably changed everything since last week because they do this all the time. But if I have a green card and I'm in that situation, you just can't come snatch me up, right? Isn't that in and of itself supposed to be illegal?
Yeah, unless the government has, you know, good reason, like a credible allegation of a crime and probable cause and an arrest warrant. You know, the U.S. Supreme Court has been clear since the 1950s that everybody physically present in the U.S., regardless of immigration status, has the full measure of rights under the First Amendment, the right to free speech, the right to associate with who you want. And in this case, the government came after Mohsen, arrested him, threw him in detention solely to punish him for his constitutionally protected speech. That's what's going on here. It happened to him. It happened to other students who have all now also been released while their cases go on. It's an incredible travesty of justice.
I presume the flight, Mohsen, you saw the ticket. Was it supposed to go to Louisiana? Was that where it was headed?
That's exactly right. In fact, they took me to the airport all the way. So we missed the flight while we were in the airport. And basically, the airplane was being taxied away.
So as much of a blessing as that was, it also exposes, I guess, some of their own incompetence, you know, in the operation, that they couldn't even get to the flight. But that's a good thing. It's a good thing that you missed it. So, Nate, we're in the Court of Appeals now.
Yeah, we're sort of on two tracks. We're in the Court of Appeals on some preliminary issues that we won in the trial court and the government has appealed. And then once that's done, we'll be back in the trial court, the federal district court, to get to the end of this case. It's called a habeas corpus proceeding. It basically means that Mohsen was seized by the government and arrested in violation of his constitutional rights. And in the coming months, we'll be presenting evidence and making our arguments to that judge.
Is he still exposed in any way? In other words, is your legal work now to reverse what happened, or is it also to prevent anything? Is there anything else that they're trying to do to gather evidence or to make up stuff about Mohsen?
Yeah, it's absolutely both. Mohsen is now protected by a court order from the federal judge in Vermont, protected against being deported. Or, you know, sent to some other state. And the court has made very clear that he is free to exercise his free speech rights and to do that anywhere in the U.S. When Mohsen was initially released, there were some, you know, limitations that the judge put on his travel. As Mohsen said, he was the first of these students to be let out. And I think the judge was trying to be cautious. But we filed an application and the judge granted it just a couple of weeks ago, lifting all those restrictions and saying, Mr. Modawi is not a threat to his community. He's obviously complying with court orders, and putting restrictions on his ability to move around in this country is harming his ability to exercise his First Amendment rights. So so he's protected by that court order now and can travel wherever he needs to, go back to school this fall in New York, and live his life.
Folks, your calls 202-588-0893 if you've got questions. Mohsen, you were detained for how long?
I was in detention for 16 days.
And are you at liberty to say where you were kept and what those conditions were like?
Yes, they kept me in a prison in Vermont. It's a state prison where basically ICE has a contract with the prison to have one section of it. So I was put in a cell that is 7 feet by 12 feet. The first week I spent roughly by myself, and then I spent time with an immigrant worker who used to work on a farm here in Vermont. It was a challenging situation for most of the detainees there.
Tell us more about how challenging it was. What were the conditions? What were you eating? How were they caring for you?
Yeah, when you look at the prison system, I believe that there should be a reform, and the reform that is aligned with the human dignity. So when you are in a prison, and keep in mind that in the prison system, this prison is considered one of the best prisons in the country, and yet still very difficult conditions for the prisoners. When you look at the basic needs of a human, what are the basic needs? You get shelter, you get food, and you get healthcare. Right. So when you look at the shelter itself, where people sleep, the mattresses that they provide for the bunk beds, they are less than 2 inches thick. So when you sleep on the mattress, you feel the hardness of the metal sheet that is on the bed. And your body takes a couple of days to adjust, but you feel pain in your body, in your muscles. You feel sore, you feel the pressure, you can't sleep well. In addition to that, the system is to keep you feeling all the time that you are monitored, you are controlled. And what happens during the night, the guards come by with a flashlight, and they shine the flashlight into your eyes while you're sleeping to check on you several times a night through the glass window in the door. And the noise that's happening around, there are noises that it makes it difficult for people to sleep in peace. Now you look at the meals that they provide three meals there. One around 6 a.m., another one around noon, and another one around 4 p.m. That's the last meal. Now, in terms to have your meal, you have only 20 minutes to eat the meal from A to Z. If you miss 5 minutes, if you're in the bathroom, if you are on a call with your attorney, if something like that happened, if you are sleeping and nobody wakes you up, 5 minutes, you miss your meal and that's it. It's gone. So this is like the first two levels of basic things. And the third one is you look at the health system and you talk to people who are there. In fact, I was imprisoned with people who are convicted with crimes as well in the same section. But you listen to them, brother, you listen to their stories, to their childhood pain and suffering, and you see that those people have been heavily traumatized from childhood. A person, for example, who I get the chance to learn his story, he saw his mother being raped in front of his eyes when he was 4 years old. And that had a scar on his memory, on his consciousness. But you go to the health system and they don't actually provide that service, like good service of health care and therapy and support. So those conditions make people feel, add to that you only have 1 hour or 2 hours maximum to go outside. And on rainy days, you can go outside. You can be locked in at any time for any reason. If you disobey what the guards are telling you, they send you into isolation rooms. So all of this is inhumane.
Yeah, it most certainly is. Mohsen, you mentioned being a refugee and what you experienced before you came to the United States. I think we'd be remiss. And again, folks, your call is 202-588-0893. I think we'd be remiss if we didn't hear that part of your story, Can you tell us a little bit about the experience, the trauma, and the persecution you were fleeing when you came here?
Thank you for the opportunity, brother. And I want to emphasize on this point that when we talk about free speech, many people think that it is about only me speaking my truth and my experience. But I want to share that it's also about the American people hearing the information from the first-hand experience. And when the government is trying to silence me and to suppress my voice, it's trying to suppress the truth and the experience that I have as first-hand experience. And this is not, as one of the lawyers had shared with me, this is not much different than banning books, banning people from reading certain books. So if people don't have an access to the truth and to the experience, how could you form a moral standard towards anything? And this is what we're seeing. We're seeing that the American people for the first time are having this awakening about what has been happening in Palestine and the censorship that and the propaganda that has been running for many years is coming to surface, because now we see it, we hear it, and so on, and people are being able to be exposed to it. So I just wanted to share that before sharing with you about my experience. A refugee camp in the West Bank, 63 acres, 10,000 people. That's where I was born and raised and I was raised with 8 other siblings, and my family still resides there. When you think of the people who have been there, I was born there as a third generation. And where did we come from? We came from we were expelled out of our lands, which is in Israel now, and prevented to go back to our homes and to our lands, 1948. So for 77 years, we have been living in refugee camps. And I can't describe the refugee camp. It's a harsh condition, overcrowded. It's more crowded and dense than Manhattan itself. People hearing each other. There is no privacy. Very narrow streets, 10 to 12 feet for streets. Thousands of alleys in the refugee camp. The sun doesn't enter the houses. When somebody dies or get injured and you have to take them on a carrier, you have to actually knock down a wall or break a window to be able to pass the carrier, the stretcher, out of the house. And this is all aftermath of Israel taking our lands and keeping us under occupation and under apartheid, as it has been classified. But the traumatizing experience for a child, because, you know, one of the merciful things in this life that a child may not know the level of suffering and pain that they live in, because this is what it is. But the traumatizing part that I've experienced and so many other children in the refugee camp experience happened during the second Intifada, which is, they call it uprising, but it is actually was provoked by Israeli politician Ariel Sharon when it started. I was 10 years old during that time. And the Israeli army started storming parts of the West Bank, and they came to my refugee camp. And in front of my eyes, I saw my best friend, a black Palestinian kid who was 14 years old. His name is Meda. He was shot in his chest, held down dead in a matter of seconds. And you could imagine, I was a child, my best friend get killed in front of my eyes. There was serious pain and trauma, and I just sense of injustice and anger. And this wasn't it. My uncle in 2001, September 12, 2001, after September 11, the Israeli army used the coverage of the media on the terror attack in New York. And they invaded other parts of the West Bank, and they killed my uncle there. They shot him twice in the head, once in the shoulder. And for me as a child, on my birthday, September 12th, I see him soaked in his blood. And I hear the sounds of the helicopters and the sound of shooting. And I see my family members, his wife and my aunts and my grandmother, weeping and I don't know how to incorporate this experience in my life. Mm-hmm. Then I see as a child an explosion. It was a strike that killed six people around the refugee camp. And I went I saw their body parts shattered around. If this is the images that we see coming from Gaza nowadays. And I collected their body parts, peeling their skin off walls, collecting a piece of a finger and put it in a plastic bag.
How old were you then? How old were you when you did that?
I was roughly 12, 13 years old during that time.
Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the My Lowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more with volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Mohsen Madawi with us, who's detained by a student at Columbia University. One of the protest leaders, he has his right to speak. His attorney, Nate Wessler, of the ACLU of Vermont, is also here. You were gathering the remains of your loved ones as a teenager.
That's great.
And let's pick up from there. Lord have mercy. So please continue. You were doing this as a child.
That's correct. As a child, I've experienced many levels of trauma, and this is one of them, where you see parts of the bodies of human beings, and you also try to figure out what part belongs to who, based on their skin color, figuring it to honor their bodies. These images are not too distant. The other day I saw a video of a father in Gaza. He was carrying a flour bag, you know, flour that you would cook with.
And Nate, these are the kind, because, you know, a lot of people hear about folks coming from other places and them being refugees. You know, I look at the Haitian community, they're under attack. They have temporary protective status for similar reasons. A lot of people don't know what's going on. That's why I wanted people to hear what someone like Mohsen is experiencing and why it is important and necessary for people like him who have these experiences to seek to come to the United States, correct? And that's a long-held, tried and true legal tradition and option for individuals, right? Mohsen is here under that, and he should be protected, correct?
That's absolutely right. I mean, it's often said, and it's true, that we are a nation of immigrants. Mohsen, you know, he's been in this country for more than a decade, as he said. He got his green card. He's been going to school. He's worked. He's a deeply connected member of his communities in Vermont and at Columbia. You know, someone with his set of experiences and who's made it to the U.S. Deserves to be and is entitled to be protected by our Constitution. And the government has just tried to run roughshod over those protections. And we're standing up in court and saying, no, you can't do that. You can't throw someone into detention for advocating for his beliefs. In Mohsen's case, speaking up for the dignity of Palestinians against war, against violence. And the government, just because they disagreed with the content of what he was saying, decided that they could retaliate against him. That is flatly a violation of the First Amendment to the Constitution.
Yeah, yeah. Mohsen, as we get ready to wrap up, and I really appreciate your time, what have you learned from this experience? What have you gained from this experience, from that detention to where you sit even today? You obviously in a beautiful place of reflection. I don't want to just come up there and do the show, man. I want to come up there and sit down and reflect myself. I need to deal with some things. But we're activists, man. So, you know, as some of the great political prisoners have always said, you know, we don't serve time. We make time serve us. And so what has this experience done for you? What has it changed or enhanced about you? And what are some of the things you're reflecting on right now?
I mean, brother, many things, but the two profound facts that I have and experiences that I have and I can share. First of all, we must speak our truth.
I Mosen froze. We may have a bad connection. Maybe we'll get him back. But Nate, while we're waiting to resume with Mosen, what I really want to ask you too is if also you're at liberty to say, because I hope people have an interest in this and want to follow it. Are you at liberty to share some of the upcoming dates, or for that matter, is there a website where people can go and follow the case too?
Yeah, we're posting information on the ACLU website. If you go just ACLU.org and just search in the search box for Mosen's name, you'll find the case page where we're posting updates. There's also updates on social media. The case will be going on for some months. It's fantastic and it's critical that Mosen is free. Now he's out of detention while we fight the rest of this case, but we have some time to go. And of course, you know, Mosen's not the only one. The government has taken the same action against Mahmoud Khalil, Rumeysa Ozturk, Dr. Badr Khansouri, and others. And those are all also in court. Those students have also been released pending the rest of their case being litigated. So far, the courts have been standing up. The courts have been doing exactly the right thing and holding the line against these gross violations of people's rights.
Yeah. ACLU.org or .com?
.org. ACLU.org. Yep.
Mosen, we lost.
Brother, I am back.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. And we'll get a call. We'll get to a call. Rick, stay online for me. Mosen, please start from the beginning. I was asking you how this experience has changed you and empowered you.
A number of things. The first one, I have to stay in my truth. Speak my truth without surrendering to fear or to intimidation. And as we saw that there was this battle of fear and intimidation, bullying people, and silence from speaking their truth. But if people are speaking their truth, they should not be scared of anybody.
Yeah.
So this is one. The second one is the contrast to fear is love. And I've learned that there are so many people in this country who are moved by love, not by fear. The people who came to the streets, the legal team, even the judges who have been issuing decisions, and the representatives of their people and the people of love have to come together. And the third one that is very important is we have to recognize all different forms of injustices, because as Martin Luther King Jr. have said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And what we are realizing nowadays that the injustice in America, which is trying to destroy and to deteriorate the system of democracy, is deeply tied to the injustice in Palestine, to the occupation and the genocide, to the apartheid and the genocide that are taking place. And to stand up for one is to stand up for all. We can't use this double standard anymore, because the battle and the stakes are much larger than any time before.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Rick from Germany, you're on the air with Mosen Madawi and his attorney Nate Wessler. Go right ahead, Rick.
Good morning, Mark, and good morning to your guests, your two guests. I just want to say that free speech is an illusion for so many poor people and working class people and even middle income people who get involved in politics. Free speech is granted to those who have wealth and power there in America. So don't be surprised at the fury that comes upon you, young man. I also want to say that there are those whites and Jews in America who believe in free speech and believe in the Constitution and want to reform the Constitution and make it a better world there in America. I'm done, Mark.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, brother. Thank you for your call. I know we got to go, gentlemen, but Nate, it's interesting that what the experiences Mohsen had, which were horrible, nevertheless allowed him to get a refugee status, get a green card, and come to this country. And ironically, children as young as he was when he had his experience are experiencing those same experiences today. Presumably, I just have to ask this. If there's a 2025 Mohsen, well, we know there are. Can a little Mohsen today, who's over there in 2025, at this hour, seek the same type of refugee status that Mohsen was able to do, or is that something that has just gone by the wayside as a result of the current politics?
Yeah, the Trump administration has tried to close the door as fast and as firmly as it can to people in dire straits who are facing persecution, trying to come to this country as a safe haven. Refugee admissions are almost entirely closed down this year, with an exception for white South African Afrikaners. The ironies are deep. I'm not an immigration lawyer. I'm a free speech lawyer. So the ins and outs of that system are a little beyond my expertise, but we're facing just a dire attack on institutions of protections that we have taken for granted for decades in this country, including for people fleeing persecution from around the world.
Folks, as we're on the air, as I'm back on the air after many years in local Washington, D.C., I just want to commend the ACLU. We did a lot of work together in the 90s. Mary Jane DeFrank and others, Laura Murphy and others. Congress imposed, some of you may recall, in 1992, the death penalty on Washington, D.C., put it on the ballot, forced it on the ballot. And we defeated that ballot initiative with doing a lot of work with the ACLU. And so always been in solidarity with them. We want to thank you, Nate Wessler, ACLU.org, read about Mohsen's case. Mohsen Madawi. Now, am I at liberty? I don't want to put all your business out there. Can I say what you said? So you're going back to school, right? Can we say that? I said it, but I didn't say where, so.
Yes, you can say it. I'm going back to Columbia University to start a new degree, a new program, and I chose that consciously to be in the middle of this fight, the fight for humanity.
Yeah. And Columbia needs you. You know, all of our higher institutions, you all, we need to, you know, their calling is free speech. That's what institutions of higher learning are supposed to be about. And clearly all of that's under attack. So we applaud Mohsen's courage going back there. And it also says something about, it contradicts some of the other perceptions we have. If Mohsen is welcoming, if Columbia is welcoming Mohsen back and he's going to remain there, that says something too. So let's just be clear. Everything that we see in news that some people in certain positions portray is not necessarily the universal atmosphere and thought. So if he's welcome to go back to Columbia, then there's hope in that space and in that situation. I hope y'all get what I'm saying without saying too much.
Yeah, and let me just say, you know, the judge in Mohsen's case released him in time to walk in his undergraduate college graduation, and the outpouring of support at that ceremony was astounding. People see what Mohsen has been through and see what he stands for, and, you know, there are a lot of members of that community who really stand with him.
Yes. And you all heard me share when we were there, we almost had a breakthrough. And I can say this now because we said it publicly in the media. I received a call from the governor's office the day of the raid, that morning, and the governor and her chief of staff wanted to negotiate as many demands as possible. So the students, these were the words, so the students would not leave the space empty-handed, and also to avoid a raid and arrests. And we were in talks all day. There was some branch of the Columbia administration was amenable, and of course the students were, I was literally on the phone, and this is not anything, I mean, this is not anything I've not said publicly. We said it on television. And I made sure that everybody was comfortable with me saying it. I was on the phone with the governor's chief of staff, with the mayor's chief of staff. And the police wanted to breach, to arrest the students and raid the students. And there were several stand down orders given. This is literally on the phone with me, and I'm on speaker. We're headed to Columbia to avoid this and to negotiate something. And the police pretty much unilaterally said, you know what, with the mayor's chief of staff on the phone, she said, don't move. She said, you know what, we're going in here anyway. That's what the police did. So that says a lot too. And what's interesting, when the New York Times did its analysis of what happened, they didn't call us. They didn't call those of us who were on the phone that night and witnessed that experience. So that was very interesting. So again, for Mohsen to continue to stand and to go back there, and also to have the support we know he has, is very, very important. And we also stand with him. Nate Wessler, ACLU.org, Mohsen Mahdawi, Rising Columbia, graduate student now. We're very proud of you. And my brother, we will be together. You know, I'm going to stand with you on the air, off the air. Brother, what you got to do, doctor?
I'm very grateful for you, brother, and for all of the work that you've been doing, the work that you do for this country, for democracy, and for humanity. And this is a spiritual work for you and for me and for many others as well. We are in this together until we see a world where everyone has equal rights and freedom.
Yes, yes, yes. Beautiful brother. Thank you. Thank you both. And we will be in touch. And listen, as I said, y'all, I'm here for you. So if anything, if there's anything we need to let the community know, if there's something you need to let them know before I reach out to you, don't hesitate to reach out to me, okay? Because we want to be sure that Mohsen and all of these students are A-okay. Thank you both.
Thank you, dear brother.
All right. Take care now. Folks, 202-588-0893. Give us a call if you've got thoughts and ideas on this current topic. And I appreciate what Rick said. There are many people. This has been a wake-up call around the world. I just expect some more news. In fact, you can probably count on this next Monday. A major on the show. A major, major, old legacy Jewish organization is preparing a statement on Gaza. I'm not going to say which one it is right now. I'm going to save that. But people are standing up. People are not feeling this starvation, this killing. And I'm going to tell you right now, you know, many people have been hesitant to use the term genocide. And as a result, you know, folks just been kind of waiting on that. And what happens now, when you see the level of starvation, you can't miss it. It's everywhere. It's on social media. If you don't see it, then you're just in denial. How, at what point, what more do you need to see to seriously consider? Well, you know, that's extreme. We don't want to say genocide. When a major Jewish organization is prepared to compare, not contrast, but compare, what's going on in Gaza with what Jews experienced in Germany under Hitler? That's pretty powerful. And so if that goes down this week, I may have those good people on next week. You know, there was a great alliance between civil rights organizations, Black civil rights organizations, African-American civil rights organizations, and Jewish civil rights organizations during the civil rights movement. And we've not had that level of unity since. And some of us know the reason why. For those who don't know, that division began, frankly, when UN Ambassador Andrew Young, the lieutenant of Dr. King, was appointed ambassador to the UN, Andrew Young, by Jimmy Carter. And Andrew Young held a meeting with the PLO, which at that time was not a recognized organization by the United States, the Palestinian Liberation Organization. And he was fired. And some, one organization in particular, I'm not going to mention that either. I'm going to let y'all fill in the blank. But the organization used that opportunity to cause a rift between African Americans and Jewish Americans, and to really divide the unity that existed up until that time. The unity that existed during the Civil Rights Movement. And it really was the beginning of this notion of Black anti-Semitism. And so that became a thing, Black anti-Semitism. And I want to say this was you know, right, not long after Jimmy Carter was elected president in 1976, the incident took place. And it began there. And then it kind of grew. The meeting was, it was, I believe it was 77. I'm trying to look at the years. I'm looking at the dates. I'm trying to be sure I have the dates right. It was 1979. 5 years later, just five short years later, Jesse Jackson ran for president. And at the time, I'm just giving y'all some historical facts now. At the time Jesse Jackson ran for president, he had, for his own safety as a presidential candidate, the protection of the Nation of Islam. And that, nobody had a problem with that. As a matter of fact, what is not too well known is that when Reverend Jackson went to Syria to gain the release of Lieutenant Goodman, who was a U.S. fighter pilot who had been shot, whose plane was shot down by Syria, and he was captive, an African-American, Robert Goodman, he goes to get this person. And brings the lieutenant back to the White House. So non-controversial was the Nation of Islam leader, Louis Farrakhan. And there are pictures of this. Louis Farrakhan is in the White House along with Reverend Jackson, Jesse Jackson, Lieutenant Goodman and his family, and Ronald Reagan. Minister Farrakhan's in the White House. All right? So again, when some of the statements of Minister Farrakhan in the past were researched and put back in the public eye, you have Andy Young, the Andy Young situation all over again. And so that's why I'm saying, when we have, as the caller Rick said, he talked about Jews and whites who we get it. There are many. Jews for racial and economic justice. All of that. Yeah, you have other organizations like that, that on the one hand can believe and support the right of Israel to exist, but who also support the right of Palestine to exist, and definitely do not support ignoring or being indifferent to a genocide. Now, some people will say, oh, Reverend Mark Thompson, Masamela Mafumo, has lost his mind. He's going to get WPFW in trouble and all that. I'm really just stating some objective facts. I've given you a factual time. None of that is my opinion. This is what happened with Andrew Young in 1979. This is what happened with the Jackson campaign in 1984. Up to a point now where it's very, very difficult, as long as this has gone on, for people of good hearts and good minds to be in denial about or to ignore. Very, very difficult. Not to mention, what about the hostages? It became clear in the beginning that there was less emphasis on rescuing hostages and more emphasis on combating Hamas or taking out Hamas at the expense of the lives of civilians, Palestinian civilians, as well as hostages who had been taken by Hamas, who were civilians. And there are protests in Israel by Israelis about that right now. Excuse me. So this is very important. And so when a Palestinian like Mohsen, he talked about gathering the remains of his loved ones as a child. He had to do that. He had to gather and pick up the remains of his loved ones as a child. Children are doing that today. Those who are still alive, if they're not being killed. And what's the stereotype? Mohsen, the stereotype that some on the right would give us, including Trump, is that, you know, Mohsen is a radical or maybe even a terrorist just by virtue of his faith, just by virtue of his nationality. And that's a funny word because Palestine is not recognized as a nation. The French just did, though. The president of France in just the last few days has recognized the state of Palestine as a nation. So, This is a very, very important moment. A very, very important moment. And we, I think, should think about what these students are going through. This is free speech. That's a question for us to answer. Do we support free speech? Do we support the right, especially in a university setting, in a higher academic environment, the right of free speech? One. Two, should we consider the role the student movement has played in our own liberation struggles? Do we need to think about that? Do we need to ponder that is another question. Or do we need to just ignore it? Or put our heads in the sand? That's another question for us to consider, I think. At this hour, and Mohsen Madawi and other students are representatives of what we witnessed in history. It's really difficult to agree with that. That's really pretty objective when you think about it. They're continuing what the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee did, what the Black Panther Party did, what Kwame Ture and others did 40, 50 years ago, 60 years ago now, really. Students, Mississippi Freedom Summer. These were students. These were young people standing up. And Lord knows, we see what this regime is. We know what this is. And we shouldn't act like we've not seen it before. We need to be prepared for it. so that we can answer some of these questions for ourselves. It has been made plain.
Thanks for getting woke and listening to Make It Plain. As always, perform an act of kindness on behalf of an elder or young person. Write a letter to a sister or brother who just so happens to find her or himself incarcerated. Offer libations to the ancestors upon whose sturdy shoulders we all now stand. And above all, give thanks to the God of your understanding by whatever name you call her and him. All God asks of us is that we give each other love. Thanks for giving MIP love. And please remember to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If all hearts and minds are clear, it has been made plain.